More!
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, Smart Talk about food, wine, farming, and many other delicious things in the North Bay and beyond, and very much beyond this evening. It is our annual Atlantic Seaboard Winery Association tasting. I think is this our 10th year?
I think it's even more. I think we did one more too. 10th or 11th.
Wow. Yeah. That's astonishing. Mm-hmm. You see my life. Yeah. Flashing before my eyes.
You must be having fun.
So, and right away I want to thank Ann Vercelli. You're the West Coast distributor for the Atlantic.
West Coast rep.
Well, that's right, rep. Thank you so much once again for organizing this and always doing such a good job. You contact me sooner than any other guest ever on Mouthful. And you always invite me to the dinner that you do with these wonderful people from the East Coast. And this year I was able to attend. And it was just lovely.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Happy you were there.
Well, and I'm happy I was there as well. It was a great group, really a great group, and a fabulous meal. And joining us this evening, Grant Crandall. You've been here, I think, for everyone, or maybe not the first
Just the last
couple.
Three.
Oh, really?
All right.
God, you're... I'm not even going to try to remember anything. You are president
That's right.
of the organization.
Correct.
And you are in Virginia.
We're in Northern Virginia uh-huh. ourselves. The,
right.
the organization covers all the way from right. Maine to Florida, the 17 mm-hmm. states of the East Coast, including New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. I know that you're out here for about 10 days.
That's right.
Okay, and you're out here in part because there is there's a competition and there's some tastings, and Dave Barber, one of these yes. days I'm going to remember your last name.
No worries.
You are secretary of the organization, but you also organize the annual tasting.
Yeah, the competition. I'm the competition chairman. We have over, usually around 500 wines from 100 different wineries in the competition every year. Our 15th annual competition is uh-huh. coming up this year.
And when does it take place?
In August, in Tyson's Corner. It's convenient for us, so that's where uh-huh. we have it. But it's usually in August, early August.
Mm-hmm. I've actually been to Tyson's Corner.
It's a nice suburb of Washington, D.C.
I cooked a dinner there.
Okay.
I was a guest chef for some event at one of those big hotels.
There's a few there.
Yeah. It was really kind of in the middle of nowhere.
It is, but now it's the middle of suburbia, just outside the Beltway of Washington, D.C. So
the only place I had to kill time was the shopping center.
There's a big mall there.
Adjacent to the hotel.
Yes. There's the Galleria there, but then the Tyson's Corner Center.
Which I think is it was probably Tyson's Corner Center.
Yes.
And I wanted to find a bookstore, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
And it had almost nothing that I was willing to read. I ended up with the autobiography of Snoop Dogg.
Well, that's exciting.
There was absolutely nothing else in this story I wanted to read. Anyway, that's my little memory.
Mm-hmm.
But we should go right into the tastings. This is very interesting. In certain years, we've done themes. We've done all mm-hmm. white. We've done all red. I think did we concentrate on sparklers?
We had a sparkling
one year.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we've ever done all rosés. All rosé.
No, we haven't.
We've had some rosés in before, but rosés are coming, as you know, coming back into vogue, and they're really popular.
Which is a good thing.
Exactly.
I love rosé.
Yeah.
So we brought two today.
Excellent.
Quite different styles from two different states.
And there's a couple of real surprises on here, too. I'm
yes.
not going to tell you what they are until we get to them.
But we have to hold off on the rosés because we're going to start with some whites.
Okay. So tell us what we're starting with.
The first is from Jones Vandrell, which is a North Carolina winery, fairly near Charlotte, North Carolina, in the Yadkin Valley. And we have a Viognier. Viognier is quite popular on the East Coast. It's originally a grape from France, and there's a whole story behind how it got there. But let me tell you about the winery first. It's been in existence since 2007. It has about 30 acres of vines. It has entered the San Francisco Chronicle just the last 3 years with a few of their wines, and the particular wine we're tasting today was judged gold in this year's San Francisco Chronicle, and the previous vintage was also judged gold. And they had a best in show as well for their Petit Mensang, and their Bordeaux blend was also gold this year, and they've won gold each of the years. So it's a well-developed winery and well-known on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. And
for the Viognier, we won a gold in our competition also because it is a good quality wine.
Annie or whoever, does anyone want to talk about how this wine compares? And I don't mean in quality. I mean in characteristics to California Viognier. Any thoughts on that?
I think the Virginia Viognier and the East Coast Viognier, they are bursting with flavor. Very, very flavorful, very floral in comparison.
Very floral.
Very floral,
that's, yes.
Compared to a West Coast Viognier.
Mm-hmm.
As I always talk in one, my classes talking about a Viognier, I said a good Viognier has got to jump out of the glass at you and give you those aromatics, and I think this one really does.
Yeah, I agree. It absolutely does. And the cost is $22.
That's right.
Yes, it's very affordable.
And it's 13.3% alcohol,
yes.
Which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'll see that on the East Coast, our alcohols tend to be lower. Mm-hmm. In fact, the vast majority of wines are somewhere between 13 and 14.5.
Mm-hmm. Good for you. I can go even lower in my preferences.
Well, some of them are. It's just a matter of we don't get as many sunny days, so obviously the grapes don't get as ripe
exactly.
to feed into that higher alcohol.
And then that would in turn then determine which varietals are really going to flourish there without the degree of, without as many Sundays.
Yes.
That's exactly right. I mean, our weather, generally speaking, there are microclimates, of course, but generally speaking, we have cold winters and we have frost in the spring. We also have rain throughout the season, unlike California, where you typically have it from October to March. We're not in a Mediterranean climate. It's one in which there's rain throughout, including hard rains and hail and wind and the like. In addition, we have humidity at a very high level, and so what we end up with is a problem with diseases, rots and mildews and the like. And one of the reasons Viognier is popular, one of the reasons it was brought from France, originally by Dennis Horton in Virginia, was because it's disease resistant.
I would think that you'd have a hard time with Pinot Noir.
That's correct.
Because the bunches are so tight. The clusters are so tight.
Right.
And thin skin. So some higher elevations, Pinot Noir will grow. But a lot of times we use the Pinot Noir, we pick it unripe or not quite ripe and use it for sparkling wine.
Exactly.
But then in New York State, the climate is a little bit different and they do have a variety of Pinot Noir. Mm-hmm. After Prohibition, they were planting a lot of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay to cash in on a sparkling wine industry. Mm-hmm. That never came aboard as much as they expected. Mm-hmm. So they're still a lot of Pinot Noir planet, so we're seeing a lot of Pinot Noirs. Good quality, table wine quality Pinot Noir.
Mm-hmm. And then I would assume that you have some trouble with Cabernet Sauvignon as well, because it ripens so late.
Yeah, most of our Cabernet Sauvignon doesn't really ripen every year, but its parent, Cabernet Franc, does much better in the East Coast, and Cabernet Franc is much more available and ripening more steadily year in and year out, and Cabernet Sauvignon. So basically, people say they come to the East and want a Cabernet and say, well, we have to use last names in the East. We want a Cabernet Franc or Cabernet Sauvignon. Cabernet Franc we can give you, Cabernet Sauvignon we can, and select years.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. So,
okay.
So we don't also do either Zin or Sauvignon Blanc very much because they tend to be cold, tender, and disease-prone.
Mm, okay. I knew that about Zinfandel. I did not know that about Sauvignon Blanc. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So again, that was Jones. You pronounce the winery for
Jones Vondrell.
Okay, Jones Vondrell Vineyards and Winery. It is Viognier, $22.
Yeah.
That's a lovely. That was a nice place to start.
Yeah.
What would you like to eat with that?
Vichyssoise. Because the acid in the wine will cut through the fat of the heavy cream of the soup.
Uh-huh.
And the full flavor of the wine will go very well with the full flavor of the potato.
There you go. I knew I could count on you for that, Annie. All right, what's next?
Our next wine is a Petit Mensang.
And that's a varietal that I'd not heard of until dinner on Friday night.
It is a varietal originally from the south of France, coming from Aurillac, which is a area south of France on the border of Spain, and actually a little peninsula going up into Spain on the Pyrenees. So you get the high climate there, higher elevation. But we found that bringing it to Virginia and other places in the northeast there, it does very well. Now here you get the flavor profile. You'll get some pineapple flavors coming through.
Oh, interesting.
And actually this is from 53rd. Winery, which was formerly Cooper Vineyards, which no new owners, changing the name, and we get a lot of pineapples in here, and caramelized pineapples almost, but you get the nice fresh fruitiness coming in the Petit Mansang.
The only pineapple wine I've had, and I know this isn't pineapple wine, I've had pineapple wine on Maui.
Yes. Well, this is quite different. This
yes.
is the Petit Mansang giving the aromas pineapple-like. But it's nice and fresh, get the richness of the fruit. A lot of Petit Mansangs are not quite as dominant as this. You can see there's a little more color in this.
Yes.
And this Petit Mansang happened to be very ripe when it was harvested and made into the wine. So we had a little more color in the skin extraction during pressing.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of color in
yes.
this.
Yes. And then because of that, we have a little bit more sweetness in there, not in the wine, but was available. So the alcohol is a little bit higher. It's 14%. So again, we have a little more body to it. But I think it's still nicely balanced.
It is very balanced. And caramelized pineapple is absolutely right on. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting the fresh pineapple so much. I'm definitely getting the caramelized.
Think of that pineapple upside down cake when
you
just take it out.
There you go. Or just, have you ever just grilled pineapple?
Perfect.
Oh, yes. I love grilled pineapple.
Yeah.
So, lovely. In fact, if I was making grilled pineapple salsa, which I do sometimes, I might even add a splash of this wine to it.
Yes.
That
there you
would
go.
Just
mm-hmm.
like make mm-hmm. it really blossom. And this is
23.95. Just under $24.
Okay. And it's, is it 100%?
Yes.
Okay.
100% Petit Mansang.
Oh, I see. I was looking at the next line.
Yeah.
And it got a gold.
Gold medal and best of category.
Best of,
in
excellent.
Our competition.
And what was the category it was in?
Petit Mansang.
Oh, okay. So
yes.
there's more than just this one.
Yes. Oh yes.
It's a fairly popular grape on the East Coast.
Okay.
We find out that with the thicker skin and the ripening season, it hangs in very well and does it very nicely. It doesn't has not as much rot susceptible, so it does very well.
And it's cold hardy as well.
Cold hardy. We want that.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. Is that the last of our white wines?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll take a musical break, and we'll be right back to start on the rosés.
Super.
Red, red wine. Go to my forget that I still need a soul. Red, red wine, it's up to you. All I can do, I've done, I find just one. It's tearing apart my blue, blue heart.
It's Mouthful. It is our annual tasting of wines from the Atlantic Seaboard Winery Association. Next up, we're going to Rhode Island. Buckle your seatbelts. It might be a bumpy flight.
The first one is actually a rosé. We had red, red wine. Well, we're getting there. It's just a rosé, and this is from Newport Winery in Rhode Island. And Grant, the grape varieties blended in this are?
It's predominantly Pinot Noir, but it has 20% of Cab Franc and 10% Cab Sauv.
It's very rare that you see Pinot Noir blended.
Yes, that's
so
true.
So this is going to be interesting to see. It's got a nice color.
This particular winery is actually in Rhode Island Sound on an island. I mean, the on an island itself. It's 60 acres of vines on Aquidneck Island. And it's benefited by the warm waters of the Gulf Stream. And that's why they're able to take some of the vinifera that are more tender to coldness and produce them there nonetheless.
Interesting. Do they have a tasting room there?
Yes, they
do. I'd love to. I like islands. I would love to visit it.
It's a fairly good-sized winery.
Okay. They do other nice things with the white grapes, Gewurztraminer, Demeanor, Pinot Gris. They are always winning wines out of them.
It's a sustainable winery. They do as little in the way of anything that is to deal with disease. They normally have a very nice breeze on this island, and that breeze helps to keep down the problems of mildew and rot and the like.
Keeps the moisture running through the grape variety, the grape cluster, so they aren't humid. Or humidity doesn't affect them. They dry out.
Nice. Now, when I that first taste, I got to see if it happens again.
Mm-hmm. But you get a lot of nice fruit.
It almost didn't happen on the second one. On that first sip, it almost tasted slightly effervescent. Just a tiny bit.
Just a hint of that, I think, there.
It's not
just a little freshness, that freshness coming through there.
And then it's very bright, very pleasingly acidic.
Mm-hmm.
I like this. So far, this is my favorite. Yeah. This is really lovely.
But nice balance with food because of the acidity,
very
the balance in the wine.
Very good food wine. Mm-hmm. Excellent food wine. Tell us what you think of it. What would you like to...
I think it would be good alone. I think it stimulates the palate because of the acid. Mm-hmm. You want that second sip.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you want in all wine. You want that second sip. You want that second glass. I think what I paired this with was the Italian antipasto, a medley of vegetables bound with vinegar and tomato sauce. Mm-hmm. So the acid in the vinegar matched the acid in the wine, and it was a good blend, good match.
Yeah, it was really lovely. One of the things I would enjoy with this on a Friday afternoon when work is done, go to your favorite bar, cafe, whatever, big old thing of good French fries, aioli on the side, and this wine.
That would really work.
Nice.
Because as you say, you have that little spritz almost in the front, but then as soon as that moves down, your mid-palate and your final palate just has that rich fruitiness, that Pinot Noir, almost cherry-like flavor coming through.
It's really a lovely wine. Mm-hmm. Really gorgeous. And let's see, it is $21.
Yes.
Ah, here's another reason I'm warming to it so well. It's 12% alcohol.
Exactly.
Right on. That is great.
You can afford to drink the whole bottle and still get up.
Exactly. You won't feel bad in the morning. How big is the movement of rosés in your region?
It's growing, as everywhere. We had, about 4 or 5 flights of rosés this year in our competition, which with 500 wines, that's a good number of wines coming through, or flights of 6. Then we have all the different grape varieties. Mm-hmm. We have, this is a vinifera blend from Newport, but the next one we have is a vinifera and native or hybrid grape blend, which is interesting too because people are making wines from every grape variety, hybrids and natives and vinifera, and sometimes blending them together.
Mm-hmm. So that's there are some areas that are known actually for rosé besides Merlot, which is very common on Long Island, where there's a pretty good sized wine industry. They're very well known for rosé.
What was I going to say? Oh, I know. How is it selling? Are people buying it? Do people tend to be selling out?
Yes. Rosés are becoming, the people who know are looking for them. It used to be in a tasting room, we pick up a rosé wine and say, I don't want anything sweet.
Exactly.
And we say pink is a color, it's not a taste, and let them know. But now people are realizing that pink is just a color, and rosés are very popular and most often are dry. My general rule of thumb is a rosé is dry, a blush is sweet. Not that all wineries follow that, but that's a good guideline.
Yeah, I agree. And it seems like it's gone over a watershed in the last year or so, where you see more people who consider themselves sophisticated drinkers are talking about and enjoying rosé. And I'm really glad to see it. I love a good rosé. It's sort of my default.
Yes.
Nightly wine.
Yes. Even in the wine stores we have, it used to be rosés were only good in the fall. You only found them in the fall. And after Thanksgiving, you couldn't find them at all. And now they're available almost year-round because the production is higher. There's more of them. Mm-hmm. And people realize they're asking for them year-round. So the wineries are making more to be available for purchase and enjoyment year-round.
Excellent. That is good news. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what is next?
We're going to segue into another rosé. This one happens to be Cross Keys Winery. It's Fiori Rosé, and this is from the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia. So it happened to be the best of category in a blended, hybridized or blended wine, because and also the best of show in our competition. It's 70% Cabernet Franc and 30% Chamberson.
And Chamberson is another one of the characteristic grapes in the area because it is resistant to disease, has looser clusters, and so it does well on the East Coast in the humid environment. But it has, you'll see, this is has a fuller mouthfeel to it, and that largely comes from the Chamberson. It doesn't even have a 1% residual sugar, and yet it's the fruitiness comes through in a very big way, largely because of the Chamberson. Mm-hmm.
Chamberson is a French-American hybrid grape. It was hybridized in the Loire Valley in the 1930s, and it became very popular there in France. But when we had the rebirth of the wine industry in the 1960s all up and down the East Coast, it was highly recommended to plant Chamberson because it is so more very versatile, but more winter hardy and more productive. But people can make a rosé out of it, as we can see here. We can do a Beaujolais style, a big, bold red wine aged in oak, and even a port-styled wine. So Chamberson is very good, and there's still a lot of people planting Chamberson and doing well with it. And this is, you know, 30% of the Chamberson adds that body and the fruit.
Lots of body and lots of mid-palate flavors.
Yes.
Really bold mid-palate flavors. Tell us what you would do with this, Amy.
I would serve it with this with a simple roasted chicken. I think the flavors of this rosé is really rich of flavor, and it would go with just a simple roasted chicken, roasted potatoes.
Which is a fabulous meal. Just a fabulous meal. Whenever anyone mentions roasted chicken, I think about this food critic, long forgotten, but he wrote for the New York Times, and he wrote an article that talked about how insulted he was if he went to someone's home for dinner and they served him roast chicken. He was such a snob. He hated being served such a lowly dish. I was like, you're there for your friends. It's good, wholesome food. Shut up. So, raising my glass to roasted chicken.
And a good rosé to match.
And a good rosé to match. I remembered what I was going to ask. Let's remind people, when we say vinifera, let's just remind them of what vinifera means and what the East Coast does instead.
We're generally talking about the wine grapes that are common here in California.
Ones from Europe.
They've originally come from Europe, and they're of a particular background. Dave might talk about the different.
It's a vinifera, the family of grapes. All grapes are Vitis, the family. V-I-T-I-S, Vitis, Vitis. They're different species of grapes. Vitis vinifera are the ones that originated in the Caucasus Mountains, but are really the dominant ones all of Europe. North American continent is happy to have the most indigenous grape species in the world than any other continent. We have Vitis labrusca, which is not Lambrusca like the Italian one, but it's Labrusca, which is commonly found from New York, Pennsylvania, New York, and Northeast. That's the Concord grapes and the Fredonia and those varieties, the one that foxiness, the ones that most people know for jellies.
Okay.
Yeah, Vitis rotundifolia, another species, which is from North Carolina south and west a little bit. That's your scuppernongs and muscadine grape variety. You have Vitis estivalis, which is basically Virginia and further west, sort of a parallel straight out there. That becomes your, there's only one dominant grape in there. It's your Norton grape, which is Vitis estivalis, which is a very good red wine. It's a native grape. It has no foxiness. It's almost vinifera-like.
Okay.
Then we have Vitis riparia, which everyone knows Vitis riparia. Anyone who plants grapes, especially vinifera grapes all around, usually plant it on a rootstock, which is a cross of Vitis riparia and some others, because it's very disease-resistant, very hardy-growing, and it does not. It's immune to phylloxera. It's causes resistance to phylloxera. Because many of these native grapes, phylloxera was found and developed in the East Coast. and all the native grapes were immune to it. So basically, your native grapes can be planted on its own rootstock, as opposed to vinifera, when it comes over in the first early settlers in the 1700s and 1600s in the East Coast, were trying to plant vinifera grapes because that's what they were used to drinking and tasting. Mm-hmm. And they grew well that first year, but then they sort of withered away because the phylloxera, the root louse, loved the roots and sort of killed the vines. So then they realized that if you get the native rootstock and graft over, you can have that vinifera growing very nicely. And there's a whole other seven or eight different kind of species of grape varieties around that are used for hybridization base and other, even some varietals drinking. Mm-hmm. A lot of the other varieties don't really do a big grape bunch, but it's a vigorous growth, and that's what's used for your base and hybridization to come up with new varietals. Mm. Just like hybridization, a cross of grapes technically is where you have the biological reproduction of a grape when you have two parents of the same species, but a hybrid is when you have the biological reproduction of a grape from two parents of different species. Mm-hmm. For instance, Cabernet Sauvignon is a cross between Cabernet Franc and Sauvignon Blanc, so it's all within the same species. But then, for instance, Vidal Blanc is a hybrid because one of the parents is Nebbiolo or Uni Blanc, the French or the Italian name of the same grape, and a Rayon d'Or, which is a Native American grape. So those two got together in the field one night and begat Vidal Blanc, but that happens to be a cross species or a hybrid species.
That is so interesting. It takes me back to my elementary school days when I fell in love with Gregor Mendel and just loved all his experiments of hybridizing various plants.
Yes.
Thank you for that lesson.
No
that
worries.
Was
That's fine.
Great. Another musical break, and we'll be right back moving into, I believe,
Reds.
Songs and melodies change and change and sway, but they still stay the same. The songs that we sung when the dark days come are the songs that we sung when we chased them away. If I ever found a pot of gold, I'd buy bottles untold of the nectar of the vines, 'cause I'm gonna die with a twinkle in my eye, 'cause I sang songs, spun stories, loved, laughed and drank wine. Tomorrow is another day. The cats are out to play, to play. That old rusty spaceship wants to sail into the Milky Way again, on a river of red, red wine.
I think that's called The Wine Song. Is that right? And it is by the Cat Empire. You got to love. I'd like to live in that country. It would work. Couple things about the wine we just tasted. Fiore from Cross Keys Vineyards and Estate in the Shenandoah Valley. 12.5% alcohol, $19.50 is the price. It also won a gold and...
Best of show. And just for clarification, that is the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia.
Of Virginia. There we go. Of Virginia. Talk to us about pairing it with food.
I think the depth of flavor would go really well with a salad, with a little citrus dressing, or even a Caesar salad. I think it would be a good start to the meal. And once again, you want that second mouthful, that second glass.
There you go. We like wines when we want more of them.
Yes.
Okay, moving on. And now we're going to stick with Champerson.
Yes.
I love that sound.
We go from the rosé of Chamberson, or 30% Chamberson, and then we go to a variety labeled Chamberson, and this is 85% Chamberson and 15% Cabernet Franc from the Port of Leonardtown Winery in Maryland. Grant, you want to say?
This is a cooperative of 13 different vineyards, and they have collectively come together to produce their wines. They actually have a winemaker from Canada, Lauren Zimmerman, and they do a lovely job with quite a few varietals, and particularly this Chamberson. They make a nice port out of it. This obviously is a standard dry style.
Was that the port we had at the dinner
yes,
on Friday?
Yes, it was. The Port of Leonardtown, since we can't call it a port. But their winery name is the Port of Leonardtown because they are in Leonardtown on the Chesapeake Bay, which was a port for the shipment ships coming in. Uh-huh. And to get around calling that Fort Sweet Wet Red Wine, they call it the Port of Leonardtown by the Port of Leonardtown Winery.
And can we not call it port for the same reason we can't call a wine Beaujolais?
Nor Champagne. Because they are
absolutely
regions and, if you
they
will,
are regions, specific
trademarks
regions.
Of in France.
Right, exactly. And port comes from Oporto.
Yes.
In Portugal, or near there. Yeah. Okay, this is very deeply colored.
Yeah, Chamberson, it can be, and Chamberson is one of the interesting things because it's a hybrid grape, as we talked about. We don't know the actual parentage of it because their hybridists weren't keeping notes there, and it might have been some natural hybrids and hybrids of hybrids, but it came from France and planted there. And it's interesting because of all the red-skinned grapes, basically the juice is clear, with four exceptions, three vinifera that we know of, and the Chamberson grape. So it's called what is called a tincture grape that actually has pink juice.
Okay.
And, of course, with the skins that are very dark, fermenting on the skins, you get that intense dark color. So it's great.
For something this deeply colored, it's really quite light on the palate. I shouldn't say light because some people take that wrong. No. Delicate. It's delicate on the palate, which I like.
Has a lot of finesse. You get a classical description of Chamberson as cherry berry. And this has an oak treatment in there, too. And I'm sure it's over a year in oak. Mm-hmm. But that develops the complexity a little further.
And what you're picking up is also a sort of general characterization of wines on the East Coast. We rarely have these big, powerful, high alcohol Robert Parker style wines.
Good
ours tend to be more on the finesse side, and our influence is more from Europe. A lot of our winemakers are originally from Europe or South Africa, and some of the consultants are as well, and so they're aiming at a finesse and a lighter style.
And that's what I like. I like finesse. I like delicacy. I like long tannins, smooth tannins, not rough tannins. This is really quite lovely. Mm-hmm. First thing it makes me think of, Andy, which surprises me, meatloaf. Meatloaf and mashed potatoes would be fabulous with this. What would you do?
I would serve this with an individual polenta timbale with a dollop of pesto. The cherry berry flavor of the Chamberson goes really well with the distinctiveness of the pesto. It's a good balance.
Very interesting. I'll have to make a point to try that at some point. That is not something I would have thought of. I always think of pesto with white wine. I would love to try that. I think you're right. I think it would be a really good match. And you served that.
I served
at
that.
The dinner.
Yes,
absolutely.
The dinner. Yes.
It was wonderful. And then, let's see. It is 13% alcohol. And it is the most expensive wine that we are tasting. $27.99.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's the pricing on the East Coast as well. Mm-hmm. It tends to be a bit lower than here and therefore more accessible because our market is completely different. Most California wines are sold through distribution around the country. And that means they've got a wholesaler and they make that kind of arrangement and distribute to a supermarket or wherever it is. On the East Coast, that's not at all true. More than 70% of all the sales are direct to consumer. So we have to get people out to the wineries and join wine clubs or participate in events or attach themselves through e-commerce and order their wines that way. And so it's a different approach, basically, to how they're sold. So we can take some of these varietals that aren't as well known on the West Coast, and we can gradually get people to understand them and like them.
But then the advantage of a hybrid, too, it produces more per vine. You have a higher production rate per vine, obviously per acre, and it's a little cheaper because, as some of the grape varieties on the East Coast, it's more disease resistant, so we don't need as much spray program. Mm-hmm. And you have economies of growing the grape, obviously, comes through in the price of the wine.
Do you have many? Do wineries on the Eastern Seaboard have many customers on the West Coast?
You can only get these on the West Coast, with a few exceptions, by directly ordering from the wineries.
I was going to say, through wine clubs.
And many of the wineries will ship. So if people are interested in these particular wines or any of these wineries, just look them up online and order.
There you go. Okay, what's next?
We have another red wine. This is from Pennsylvania. It is Waltz Vineyards. Waltz, W-A-L-T-Z. It's from Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Oh, Lancaster. Isn't that Amish country?
Yes, right in there. But they do a lot of nice red wines. Waltz actually does some nice Sauvignon Blancs and some Chardonnays also. But this is their Baron Red, which is a blend of Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon.
Everything at the winery is hand-harvested. They use 100% French oaks, and they have a consulting enologist from Italy, Goffredo Agostini.
So
here we go, our favorite sound.
The wine being freed from the bottle.
Here we go. Again, a beautiful color.
Mm-hmm. So it's a Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon, 80% Merlot and 20% Cabernet Sauvignon. So again, the Cabernet Sauvignon is not the star, because you get enough to blend, but the Merlot, being softer, more of a right style, can ripen on a more regular basis. That's why it is the dominant red grape there.
And this one is 14% alcohol. Mm-hmm. It retails for $27, and it won a gold.
Yes.
Yes.
And these awards we're talking about, are all the August tasting.
Atlantic Seaboard tasting.
Yes. Yeah, ours is the largest competition focusing exclusively on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And these are the awards from that competition. Then we have a reception on Capitol Hill where they're honored with the Congressional Wine Caucus.
All the Best of Category winners and the Best of Show Award winners are invited to Capitol Hill. We deal with the Congressional Wine Caucus. Currently, the chairman is Mike Thompson.
I was going to ask if Mike was the. I know Mike really well.
Yes. His staff is the one who arranges our room, and we come on, and we appreciate Mike and as the Wine Caucus. And
he's a great guy.
Yes.
He's been extremely helpful to our efforts.
Yeah.
So wine definitely crosses all borders. Mm-hmm. And that's an example there where we all work together. And there is that, people say in a local winery, what do you have this? And they'll go to our winery next door. And people say, aren't you recommending our competition? No, we're recommending the industry. And that comes in California, Virginia, New York, the world of making wine.
There you go. Excellent.
And because the economics are such that you need to get people out to your winery to sell on the East Coast, there's a lot more cooperation among the wineries in terms of wine trails and the like. Because if you get somebody who wants to go from Boston to somewhere, you know, in 2 hours from there, you have to attract them not just with a single winery, but several in the area. So there's a lot more cooperative spirit on the marketing side.
You know, let's pursue what, because I was going to ask you about this when we were through tasting, but since you brought it up, let's do it now. Resources are there for people who want to go to the East Coast and taste wine? You mentioned wine trails. What is the best way for people to start to navigate that region?
Each of the states on the East Coast has a winery association or a wine growers association. So you can go to the state association and get all the basic information, maps and the like. And obviously, if you then figure out where within a state you're interested in going, you can look for wine trails and get some basic information. You can certainly contact us, the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association. We would be glad to help with that sort of thing as well. Tourism around wine, while it's gigantic here in Napa and Sonoma, is a big factor on the East Coast. The vast majority of wineries are within 2 hours of a major metropolitan area, and that's why the direct to consumer works, because you've got Boston and New York and Philadelphia and Baltimore and D.C. and Atlanta. And so you're within an easy range of getting there. Even if you're visiting, say, friends in the Washington, D.C., you can get out to a whole bunch of really good wineries in the northern part of Virginia.
Virginia, excellent.
And a lot of states are realizing that it's a good bonus for them, because the more wine sold, the more tax dollars they collect.
Sure.
So a lot of that tax dollars go back from the state into wine promotion or agritourist promotions.
Yeah, and so many people will travel specifically for wine. Mm-hmm. I mean, we see that here in Sonoma County all the time. But I also know a lot of people who they're going to go to Italy to taste wine. They're going to go to France or Spain to taste wine. Go to the East Coast. It's really interesting.
And we see quite a bit of it. The Finger Lakes, for example, attracts a large number of people who are coming in simply to taste wine. That's what they're doing. And Virginia now certainly has a huge number of people. The number of visits from out-of-state people, as a matter of fact, up and down the East Coast to Virginia is very high.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, one last musical break. This was my pick. I love this song. We'll be right back.
I say W
That, of course, is the Frank Zappa version of the 1950 song WPLJ, White Port and Lemon Juice, originally done by the Four Deuces, or the Eights, as Anthony says. Going back to Walt's Vineyards, Baron Red, the 80% Merlot, 20% Cabernet Sauvignon. Annie, what do you like to do with this wine?
I would pair this with Tortino di Crispelli, a tower of crepes. Seven crepes layered with mozzarella, parmesan, mortadella, and a little sugo bolognese. And it's a nice pasta course. It's light so that you can go on and continue with the meal. Just as the wine had very soft tannins and a real elegance to it, so that you could go on to more wines in the meal, but also more another course. Mm-hmm. Very, very light dish.
Very and light. We had that Friday night. It was so delicious. Absolutely wonderful. Mm-hmm. So we have something not on the list, really?
No, it is on the list.
Okay, I thought so.
It happens to be a little diversion. Cideries are growing leaps and bounds.
All over the country.
And our competition allows ciders and meads to be entered, as well as fruit wines. Uh-huh. This happens to be a cider.
And this producer is Bold Rock Cider from Nellie's Ford, Virginia, which is south central Virginia. They source all of their apples from within 35 miles of the cidery. They have an associated cidery in northern North Carolina in Mills River, so that they're based on very much on the local situation. However, it is the nation's largest independently owned cider company, so it's a fairly large operation. It was founded by a local apple grower, John Rushburn, and a New Zealand cider expert, Brian Shanks. And they got together and put together a really successful cider company.
And they call it an IPA.
Well, that's interesting. What they're trying to do, obviously, is pull on people who are interested in the craft beer.
Right.
But what they have, and the reason that they're doing that in this particular case, is they have used five hops in the production of this particular cider, including Cascade, Centennial, and Citra, if you know the hops. So it's both a marketing thing and also part of the way they produce this particular cider.
Interesting. And it's what size bottle is that? That's a...
It's a regular beer bottle.
Yeah, it's
a
beer bottle
12-ounce bottle.
And it's 4.7% alcohol, and it sells for $10.
$10 for four.
Four-pack.
Oh, for a four-pack.
Yeah. It's better to drink.
$2.50 a bottle. There
That's
we go.
That's right.
Okay.
They do a lot of different styles of ciders and the Bold Rock. And
we've got some that sell in that size bottle for like $10 and $12 here.
Yeah. Mm. And traditionally, as people may know, the Shenandoah Valley was a big apple grower. Mm-hmm. So when apples are there and Washington State started doing more apples, we still had the market or the production of growing apples. What are we going to do with it? So maybe a lot more cideries have come around and using the local products mm-hmm. and making the cider.
Now, I am not – you have to talk to me about the hops in here. I am not tasting hops.
It's very subtle, but I think it gives you a little body in there.
Is it is it also the dryness on the finish?
Yes.
Is that from hops?
Yes. The dryness on the finish.
Okay.
And that's what they're aiming for.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Besides the marketing factor.
Because I have a problem with hops. Mm-hmm. I can't stand Pliny the Younger.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like heavily hopped beer. I actually think I'm allergic to hops.
Well, this is
but
very
this is
lightly
very
hopped.
Subtle.
Yeah.
It's very
just
nice.
Just a little body and that lingering flavor. And again, it's a little sweeter. It's 3.6% sweetness,
but it's not overly sweet.
The hops and everything else give you that tendency of a drier perception.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Mm-hmm. I would serve this with pound cake with a few berries on the side. The freshness of the cider goes very well with the richness of the pound cake.
Oh, very interesting. Very interesting. What I think I might do with this, I make a dish, and it's not mine, I take no credit for it, called Normandy chicken. And it's chicken I do with thighs because I think that's the most flavorful. But I saute sliced apples. I saute chicken thighs. Add cider. You know, make sure the chicken's cooked all the way through. Take it out of the pan. Deglaze the pan first with more cider. And then it's sauteed in butter, of course. It's Normandy. And then add cream. So you have this very rich, very creamy sauce with this this foundation of apple. And then you put the chicken back in and the apples back in. And it's just very simple but very lush. And I think this would be wonderful with it.
That would be play on the apples of the food and the glass and all coming together.
And that dryness on the palate. And the high notes will cut through
the sweetness of the apple.
And the creaminess,
the
richness of the cream.
Mm-hmm. So ciders are coming in as Bold Rock is there. They bought out a former winery and converted to cidery. And they have about a dozen different styles of cider during our competition.
Okay. And this received a gold?
Yes.
It's very nice, very nice. Okay, and now the one that is very intriguing. Tell us, Grant, you tell us about this.
The next one we're sharing is a fruit wine, which we do see still on the East Coast to some degree. It's a cranberry wine made by Tomasello Winery, which is in Hammondston, New Jersey. It's the second oldest winery in New Jersey. The land has been in the family's ownership since 1933. The grandfather originally started it. Now the grandsons are running the operation at this point. They have a long growing season there because there's a maritime effect because it's right near the ocean. And after Prohibition, there's an interesting story here. This was one of the very first wineries that went down to Washington, D.C. and got their license immediately when that was available. They were literally the 68th license issued in the nation.
It's a beautiful color. You know, mm-hmm. It's a color that I really like to wear as a dress or a skirt. It's really pretty.
But don't spill it.
Don't spill it. Don't spill it.
Yeah. And where Grant mentioned it's from New Jersey, but we have the first AVA, American Viticultural Area in New Jersey, is called the Outer Coastal Plain, which runs about 50 miles from just south of the northern part of Jersey all the way down the coast and around Cape May. And this is within the AVA.
Okay. It's really interesting, mm-hmm. and I don't mean that in a negative way. Mm-hmm. There is no mistaking that it's cranberry. It is cranberry for sure, mm-hmm. and I love cranberry.
Yeah, that's the best thing about fruit wines. Mm-hmm. They're so easy to judge because they really are right on with that fruit, or they're really off, and you can put them away. But this one is right on. As soon as you smell it, and you get cranberries right up the nose.
And what's the residual sugar?
It's 8%, but because it's cranberry, it doesn't really go that way.
It's not cloying.
If you've ever made cranberries from fresh cranberries, you know you have to add a lot of sugar because they're tart.
Definitely. They're very tart. This is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Really, really beautiful.
You get that fruit and a little bit of spiciness for the natural mm-hmm. spiciness of the cranberry coming through. Almost even better than your cranberry sauce at Thanksgiving.
What would you do with this, Amy?
Turkey. It's calling me for Thanksgiving dinner.
Ah.
But the aromatics of this wine, you could smell this all night.
Yes.
And so much of aroma and aromatics are part of wine tasting. But the aromatics of this wine are phenomenal, followed up by a rich, long taste.
Yeah, it's really gorgeous. Mm-hmm. This might be my favorite.
Okay, yeah.
I'm really surprised. It's absolutely gorgeous. I should say it's 9% alcohol. It sells for $12.95 a bottle.
It's a 500 milliliter bottle.
And it is 100% cranberries.
Correct.
There you go. And that completes our tasting. Mm-hmm. We've got just a couple minutes left. So tomorrow, is tomorrow when you head up to Davis?
Tuesday we go.
Oh, Tuesday. So what are you doing tomorrow?
Visiting more wineries, doing research and development.
That's research we do.
There you go. Absolutely. Do you know where you're going yet?
Yes. We're going to Markham in St. Helena and Clos Duval in Napa.
Oh, okay. Going to the next county over?
Yes.
Okay.
And then the next day, we head over to Davis. UC Davis. We've presented to the viticulture and enology students at UC Davis for a number of years, and we're going to have another presentation. It's kind of interesting because when we first got there, I don't think they were as familiar with East Coast wines and what the industry was doing. And a lot of the focus at UC Davis, of course, is on what's happening on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the students recently have gotten very interested in the East Coast because, first of all, there are more jobs on the East Coast at this point than on the West. And secondly, if you can go to the East Coast and produce wine with all the challenges, the humidity and the rain and all the other issues that you have there, then you kind of can go anywhere in the world and produce wine. You learn a lot of the techniques that are very important in handling difficulties and problems. So the students are pretty excited about the East Coast, and we love to talk with them.
Excellent. And on that note, it is time to say goodbye. I want to thank, with tremendous enthusiasm, Ann Vercelli. Thank you so much, Annie. Grant Crandall, president of the organization. Thank you so much. Your lovely wife, Angela. Is it Angela Crandall?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And Dave Barber, I will see you this time and next year, and we'll have dinner at my house as well.
Thank you for having us. It's super.
And you have a great week. Take care of each other and meet me back here next Sunday at 6 for another yummy episode of Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming in the North Bay and beyond. Have a great week. Take care of yourself and take care of your loved ones.